Welcome to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives, Wisconsin chapter. Our goal is for listeners to find this podcast as relaxing as coffee with friends, and just as comfortable as our guests and observers banter about questions that are on all of our minds. If you've listened to these podcasts before, you're familiar with the format. I'm your host, Janet Schultz. I'm Chief Information Officer at a human services company called MyPath. Our observers today are Madeline Bushman, who is an operations manager in the Mayo Clinic Health System, Department of Family Medicine. Can you say hello, Madeline?
Hello, everyone.
Good to have you. And we also have a guest observer, Kimberly Stapelfeld, who is a senior administrator with Aurora Healthcare Medical Group. Say hello, Kim.
Hi, this is Kim Stapelfeld. Nice to be with you today, Janet. Thank you.
Well, and it's great to be having coffee with the college with you, Kim, as well. In our last podcast, we talked about employee health and well-being from a boots-on-the-ground perspective. How can team members and team leaders support each other? Today, we're taking a more global view of workforce resilience and how companies can intentionally choose to build structures and systems to support it. Our guest for this topic is Ted Ewson. Ted is the former president and CEO of FEI Behavioral Health, a workforce resilience company that partners with organizations to protect and enhance workforce effectiveness and organizational resiliency. For over 25 years, Ted has worked with corporations of all sizes, healthcare organizations, nonprofits, and government entities to help design, build, and execute resilience strategies for companies, employees, and their customers. So needless to say, we're anxious to learn from and hear from Ted today. Welcome, Ted.
Hi, Janet. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet. So as we just heard, Ted, you have literally decades of experience in helping companies with workforce resilience. If you don't mind, let's start at the beginning. What usually prompts a company to pick up the phone and call an external resource to support this kind of work?
Well, Janet, I'd love to tell you that everybody out there is trying to think ahead and be on the front end, be proactive in figuring this out and in putting together strategies for resilience for their employees, but it's really just not the case. In most cases, I think what typically drives a company to start thinking about this is some sort of event, and typically not a positive event. It might be something negative that happens in general at the business. It might be a challenge that rears its head with an employee or between an employee and a manager. It might be an outside force that makes something kind of crazy happen, and they need to stop and take a moment and think about what they should do and how they should react to it. I'll give you an example. A lot of times they're painful kind of events. So for example, let's use a bank as an example. So in a bank, let's say there's a robbery of that bank, and you have the employees who were working that day, whether they be tellers or other folks within the context of the bank. Hopefully everybody is safe and okay. Hopefully maybe even they've caught the individual who robbed the bank. But typically what happens is employees are challenged to kind of resume the normal approach of work after that. And so that might be a reason for that bank to say, you know what, we need to put some strategies together to help our employees work through this, to give them some time to get back to work, to get to the level of efficiency that they were at, and to be comfortable not only coming to work, but in continuing their lifestyle. So that's just one example of something that might happen, but there are all kinds of them. But it's typically something bad that happens that has people react and then try to do something.
Well, what worries me a bit, Ted, about what you just said is that unfortunately life continues to unfold, right? And when something bad happens, it's not like an employer can hit a pause button and say, can you give us a minute to figure this out? So Can you share any stories about some circumstances that were handled well and some where maybe an employer stubbed the toe because you couldn't hit a pause button and plan in the moment?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Janet. We teach people all the time that the worst time to try to figure out an approach for moving forward is in the middle of the crisis or in the middle of the event of what's happening, because you just don't have the energy, you don't have the time, and sometimes you don't have the resources to be able to figure that out. So the key is trying to get ahead of that in some way, shape, and form. So I'll give you one example of a company that I've worked with in the past who I thought was wonderful at getting after this. So Prudential Insurance is a former customer of mine, former partner of mine. And I always looked at them as somebody who was very proactive in trying to head these things off, right? And really taking a look at what do their employees look like? What needs do their employees have? What challenges do their employees have? And trying to think about that before something bad happens, so that they're ready to react for that. And to do that, they did all kinds of things, right? So they did a really nice job of bringing the idea of behavioral health and physical health together and understanding how those work within the workplace, creating opportunities for people to help with work-life services. So understanding that individuals bring a lot with them to the office every day. Maybe in today's world, we might say bring it to the Zoom meeting every day. The same kind of thought process. And all of those things, whether they're things related to work or their personal aspect, are on their mind and are impacting what happens every day. And if you want your employees to be able to work through that, both in the office as well as home, you know, how do you get out ahead of that? And so they'd put work-life programs in place, give people solutions to help with, you know, counseling, for example, right? Think about traditional employee assistance programs, which a lot of companies have in place and can help along this path, but many don't use to the extent that they should use, or their employees don't fully understand that they have those benefits. A company like Prudential, I thought, always did a wonderful job of being out in front of that in terms of having those benefits available for employees, helping employees understand what was available to them and how they would get access to them and to help them through these challenges. Unfortunately, I probably see more companies that aren't ready for that, right? Who are trying to do those kinds of things in the midst of a struggle. I won't point out anyone in particular in that particular case, but we've seen cases where, for example, people underestimated the impact of the political climate on what would be happening in employees, right? And so we sometimes forget that our offices and our company structures are really communities, and they're really subsets of the communities that we live in, and frankly have the same challenges that those communities have regularly. And so when you have a politically charged environment like we have had for really many years now, that creates some challenges sometimes in the office space, right? And how do you deal with that? When people bring that to the office space with them, how do you help people work through that? So not being prepared for that, there was a lot of employee conflicts, in particular around election times or coming out of election time. The election last November, for example, was a very challenging period for a lot of companies who hadn't really thought about what that would be. And in some cases, people, I think, last fall thought they were somewhat safe from that because many of them weren't physically in the office. The interactions that they were having online were almost more intensified than what was happening in the office. So completely unprepared for that. And that's a case where they came to us to help them kind of work through that, right? To begin to help the employees understand that there are two different sides to every story. We don't have to agree on everything, but we need need to be open to people's viewpoints and responses, and we have to figure out how to work together. And so in that case, there was a lot of one-on-one sessions, mediation sessions. There was then some training and work to help people understand and begin to work through that. It's an ongoing thing. It's not, so there's no silver bullets, right? So if you haven't done any planning and you don't have any of those things in place, they're going to take time to work through.
So Ted, you know, you mentioned that it's usually an event that triggers this reactive response to developing these resilience strategies. Once a company wakes up to this need, what are some of the foundational structures that are often put in place?
Well, I think one of the first ones is understanding that managers and supervisors don't always have the answers for everything, and also are typically not trained to deal with the emotional side of the charge that sort of happens when these events happen. And so one of the foundational pieces is helping people understand that there are going to be these kinds of events and moments in the business and in the work we're doing, and helping people prepare for them ahead of time. And in particular, as managers and supervisors, learning how to, you know, a lot of times we send people to classes, leadership classes or management classes, and they become more operational than they are emotional. And so one of the things is understanding that there is this emotional side to it, and that people need to be prepared for that as well as they need to be prepared for it operationally. So in the same way that we would teach a manager how to deal with managing time off of employees and dealing with, again, the physical operational aspects of the job, let's also teach them and prepare them for dealing with how their employees are going to interact, how they need to interact. How do you deal with, you know, we talked about those political things before, right? EDI is another area that individuals and companies are having to deal with right now, equity, diversity, and inclusion, having to deal with. Well, putting managers and supervisors in a position to think about that, learn about that, and be able to work through that is a very key, important point. I think the other piece is you need to have leadership from the top down, right? These are strategies and plans that can't really evolve from the bottom. The entire organization should be involved in putting them together and making them happen, but you have to have the leadership from the top and the support for an open environment to create that. And then the other piece that I think is relevant is to tie it into employee engagement. When you begin to talk about resilience strategies and helping people be more comfortable in the environments that they're in, it gets very much tied to employee engagement from that perspective. And we should wrap employees into those conversations, bring their viewpoints in, and help everybody work through it. So those are just some of the foundational things. The other thing that I would say is it's really important to get your arms around the data, right? It's amazing to me sometimes how companies don't fully understand what their workforce looks like and what the challenges of their workforce can be like. So understanding who you have as employees and what they look like and where they come from and understanding what they're involved in is all helpful in terms of putting together a full strategy going forward.
So Ted, you talked a little bit about, you know, some of the educational opportunities that, you know, you're looking that is helpful for companies to engage in. And it almost sounded like a little bit like kind of crucial conversations, those types of courses and things of that nature. Are there outside resources that you typically would lean into or would recommend to a leader to help support this type of cultural shift?
Yeah, so there's really all kinds. I think the first thing along those lines, Kim, is to not just think about it in terms of classes or training, kind of one-hit kind of approaches, right? So there are a lot of places and a lot of partners that you can work with for classes. And in the last 12 to 18 months, the amount of our types of classes online that have become available, it's amazing what's out there from a lot of different resources. But the key is to not just think of it as those individual classes and trainings and, okay, we'll go to a training and suddenly everything's going to be okay, right? You really need to sort of think about it as a process and understand where that training fits in to that. So part of this, I would say, is I mentioned DAPs before. Lots of companies have employee assistance programs in place. Many of them don't utilize them to the level they should. Well, an employee assistance program can be a great partner with you in helping you build the strategy and then bringing those classes and trainings and informational sessions in place in a lot of different categories. So that's one place that we would often refer people to. The other place would be to connect with universities or other schools. And again, to think about this, not just in terms of the classes, right? So that often happens with like MBA programs or things like that, right? And they'll create opportunities for employees to go. But typically you can find in the structure of most universities, those types of classes, like you mentioned, Crucial Conversations is a real important one, right? There's a lot more, again, equity, diversity, and inclusion type classes that are in there. Teaching people or helping people understand empathy and the role of empathy in the workplace, those types of classes. So sometimes things that you would see in social services curriculums and other places like that, those can be other places to work with a partner like that to try to find some of those and adapt them to your workforce and adapt them to an adult education in environment, right? And that's the other piece that I think is important in all of that is working with folks who understand adult education, because that's a huge part of it. And so there are a lot of resources for just going to find a class out there. And I'm not saying any of those are bad, they're good. But when you're thinking about partners, I'd lean more towards the places like I just mentioned.
So Ted, as you've commented a couple of times already now, you've mentioned that companies often have EAP resources, but they're not optimized, or maybe employees aren't tapping into them as much as we would hope. So do you have any nuggets of advice about how to help employees use those kinds of structures that are a key part of workforce resilience, or could be if we got people to use them?
Yeah, I think the first, second, and third most important thing is education, right? Is teaching people that those resources are available. So unfortunately, what we see happen a lot is you go through your employee orientation, you're given a packet, you're given information about all kinds of different things and benefits that you have. Typically, the EAP is mentioned in that context, but then never really revisited much after that, right? So unlike your other benefits, like your health benefits and things like that, where you have to enroll and you go through that on an annual basis. That doesn't happen with employee assistance programs. So making sure that it's front and center for employees and that they understand that it's a resource that's available for them. Making sure that managers and supervisors, again, go back to something I said earlier, making sure that they're in a position to be able to continually tell their employees about those kinds of things and have it available as a resource for them as a manager, as well as for their employees, is really important. And some of that goes to who your EAP partner is, right? So a lot of people check the box, oh, we got the EAP in place and we're all set, but they don't work with their EAP partner on a regular basis. And so I would challenge companies to do that, right? To make sure that they're interacting with them and working with them as a partner, because they have a ton of resources that are available and they can bring those to bear, everything from helping you market the services that are available to putting the plans in place. The other thing I would recommend for folks is EAP has a little bit of a stigma attached to it sometimes, in that people immediately think about it as counseling. And then they think about it in terms of mental health. And just like the challenges that we have, and I know I don't have to share with any of you in terms of mental health, right? Raising people's awareness and getting people to talk about it. Well, that same issue sort of happens with EAP sometimes, right? And so part of it is helping employees understand, sometimes helping companies understand that it's not just a counseling resource, right? It is this greater resilience resource. And we think about those work-life pieces that can be a part of it and other aspects to it. I think getting people to know that and having it front and center for them pretty regularly helps with that, right? Because then people know where they can reach out to do it. And they know that they don't only have to reach out if they need counseling service, which is a challenge sometimes in and of itself, but that there are other resources available. I mean, EAPs can help with things like finding childcare, finding adult care, finding scholarships, helping you find scholarships for your kids in college, things like that. So there's lots of aspects to it that I think are really important, and getting those up front and center for people will be helpful.
You know, as I think about it, Ted, you know, your charge and your ask is to really create what we see in healthcare as an emergency preparedness plan. It's almost as if we need a resiliency preparedness plan for our group to really help support that. And I guess, you know, as you've worked with companies over the years, you know, what kind of planning should leaders think about as they look to tackle this issue as we consider resiliency in the workforce?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Kim. The concept of an emergency management plan is something that everybody understands. Unfortunately, emergency management plans often forget about the people, forget about the most, right? You know, but there's a plan for the technology, there's a plan for the hardware, there's a plan for pretty much everything. But when it comes down to people, there's often things like phone trees in there and general notification versus really thinking about the complexity of your most important asset, the employee, right? So when we begin to think about these plans, you know, I think the connection to healthcare and the way we think about healthcare and the way we think about the total health and wellness of an individual, right? So when you begin to talk about things like social determinants of health being probably a greater impactful piece than physical health, mental health being part about that, but that whole piece, you need to think about your emergency management plan or your people plan the same way, right? It has to be all inclusive. And so it can't just be about benefits. It can't just be about, oh, what happens on a regular day-to-day basis and how do you do your job? Think SOP manual or things like that. It has to be thinking about all of these, if you will, social determinants, right, of what's going on. And so that plan should have those elements in place. And it's not just about, okay, if something bad happens or there's something going on and we tell people not to come in, we should be thinking ahead in that plan about helping people deal with that and debriefing from that and moving on from that. And so not that you want to put everything into sort of this emergency management, deep, intense kind of bucket all the time, but using that thought process of before, during, and after to think about your resilience plan for your for your company as well as your employees is a good way to think about it. What are we going to be doing ahead of time to get people prepared for and understand everything from what roles are, or what could happen, or where things are at? How are we going to deal with it during it? And then what do we need to do afterwards? Because as we know, it's never just done, right? There's always some level of lingering impact. And when you think about resilience, and you think about what people bring to the office every single day, there's going to be lingering impact from so many other pieces. And so how do we just think about that as part of our plan? And it's not that every company has to become mental health experts and every company has to become a resilience expert. It's just understanding that that is part of what makes up the interaction of your employees. It's ultimately what goes into the success of the business, right? I mean, you can trace it back to, do we want employees to stick around long? Do we want them to be healthy, active, and impactful when they're there? You're going to answer yes to those questions all the time. Well, if you're going to answer yes to those questions, then you should be answering yes to a resilience plan to help make sure that those kinds of things that can happen. Because the reality is, if you don't make those things happen, it gets more expensive, frankly. I mean, if you're looking for a real reason or you want to try to tie it to ROI, that's really it, right? If you don't think about this, if you don't try to put a plan together or understand what your employees are, you're going to be replacing more employees. And frankly, in today's market, that is not an easy thing to do. And it's always been more expensive to replace someone than it is to retain someone and help someone grow.
Let's pause for a moment to thank our sponsors who make this podcast possible, and for that, we truly appreciate them. Our premier sponsors are Epstein Ewan Architects, HGA, and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Hall Render, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady.
Had I thought of something earlier when you mentioned these outside courses that leaders can register and participate in, like the Crucial Conversations and Emotional Intelligence, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And I thought about the development of some of these roles that we haven't seen previously in healthcare, like the Chief of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, for example. And have you seen a difference in success and successful outcomes of plans implemented for organizations that are investing in these roles compared to those who have not yet moved in this direction?
Yeah, I don't have enough data to point to that specifically, right? To say here's the good solid data to show that it's more impactful and better results if you do XYZ, in particular, you put those folks in hand, right? So what we have is more anecdotal data in terms of the companies that have taken the time and made the investment in thinking about those things and creating champions within their organization and putting the pieces in place, find it easier to execute those strategies. And the early indications are creating healthier and more impactful environments. But I don't know that the data is there directly. I do know that if you don't make the decision to invest and you don't create the champions, you won't be able to get anything done, right? You're just not going to be able to, bring a single class or have one single event happen, and suddenly now, boom, the organization is set to go and everybody's ready and we can be more resilient. So we know that won't work. I think we're in a lot of regards in the early stages of this, and it has taken a while. You got to kind of think about this like insurance a little bit. From this perspective of you've got to make some investments and put the pieces in place. In some cases, you hope you never have to use or access things. But in other cases, you want to be prepared to make those things happen. And then if something bad happens, you can make that shift and you can be covered, if you will, in doing that. So I think people have waited for something to happen. So there's just not enough data out there to see. It's very similar to I look at the general wellness conversation. So if you go back about 5 to 8 years, there was a major push on wellness. So you saw a lot of wellness companies, wellness programs. You saw companies thinking more directly about wellness. There's a lot of data that's been generated, but that data, you can find just as many people on one side as you can on the other as to whether or not there's an ROI for it and it's been impactful and those kinds of things. I think we're at the stages, the beginning stages, when we talk about resilience, when we talk about some of these other pieces, we're in that same kind of phase now here at the beginning. And we're just starting to see those investments being made, and we'll see what happens. I would challenge people to not get wrapped up in pure ROI. You know, one of the challenges I think we have is, you know, where's the dollar for dollar? For every dollar I'm investing, what can I get back? Well, we know in the case of employee assistance programs and in some of the wellness programs, right, we can see $3 to $5 for every dollar invested. Those are some of the numbers that have been generated over time. But I think when you think about this in general, if you're only looking for that hardcore, it's going to take a while to get there. And if you're going to wait for that data to be in place, you're going to kind of miss the boat. And so the opportunity to get out in front of it and to think about some of those investments ahead of that, I think, is where people need to be and where they are now, frankly.
Ted, I know I threw you a curveball with that question, so I really appreciate your response. That was Thanks. Great. Thank you.
Ted, you've talked about a few things here, and this may be another one of those tough questions, as Madeline just alluded to. But when you've been working over time with companies on this kind of effort, how do companies typically measure success? Is it even possible to measure success?
Yeah, there's a lot of independent proof points, I think, that are being played around with, right? So everything from retention numbers, right? Retention numbers is often something that gets put in the mix for a lot of these types of programs to say, are they having impact? You know, I think when we talk about resilience, right, and we think about what's ultimately behind that, there's sort of the personal piece of it and the company piece of it. And one of the places where that crosses over a lot is people being physically present and able to do their work and be impactful like that. And for them to be emotionally present when they're physically present and doing their work, right? So some of the things that people look at, you look at things like absenteeism and presenteeism and effectiveness around there. Those become some data points when we look at, obviously, the more often somebody is able to be at work and be impactful when they're doing their role, whatever that is, right? And each individual role will have its own metrics around what that is. But those begin to look like numbers. That presenteeism thing is a little bit more difficult to get your arms around, right? So the idea of, yeah, I can be in the office or I can be at my computer if we're working remotely, but am I really there? Right? Am I really spending the time and focus, or am I worried about something else? So the ability to begin to look at the impactfulness of the time that people are spending while they're there, those would be some of the kinds of things that I think you would start to look at metrics wise. Frankly, though, that's one of the reasons why these are hard conversations, right? I've had the opportunity in the last 10 years to do a lot of work in the nonprofit space as well, too. And I see this manifest itself in other ways. You can find data points, and we're always looking for data points, but sometimes there's just not good data out there. Or it's difficult to find it, or it takes a while to begin to really see what that impact is over time, right? And you're not going to see it in just a 6 month period or a 7 month period, right? It's data that has to sort of evolve over the years, and unfortunately, I think people give up sometimes before we have a chance to be able to get to that point. So I think it is kind of hard, and I think people are searching for those elements, right? Again, I think we should be looking at, are we keeping our staff in place? Are we keeping our retention rates good? We should be looking at employee engagement and satisfaction scores. Those kinds of things all wrap in and are a part of ultimately, do you have a resilient organization, right? If people aren't happy going to work, whether that's going to work in a Zoom call or that's going to work physically into an office, that's going to have an impact on the business, and it's going to have an impact on the business's resilience. I think making sure that people are using their time off, right, that people are taking, whether you're in a PTO program or a vacation program, that people are actually getting and taking the time they need to refresh and be where they at is as important as people physically being in the office and being ready to go when they're in the office. Because if you don't take that time off or you don't have the time you need, it's going to be difficult for you to be present and having the impact that you want. So those are, I get it. Those are a little bit of a wishy-washy answer, Janet, but I think those are some of the metrics that the folks are looking at. This is hard stuff. It's not simple math. I wish it was, because then everybody I think would be doing it and we'd be able to point to where we need to go. But, just like people, everything's a little bit different. Every business is a little bit different. Every approach is going to be a little bit different, depending on the mix of your employees and where things are at, the kinds of things you do, and ultimately the kinds of metrics you look at to think about success are going to be different. So maybe the most important thing for people to do is to make sure that they are thinking about what constitutes success. Right. So what are the things we're going to look at? How are we going to check ourselves to see, do we have a good plan in place? Are we executing that plan? And is it having impact versus let's just put some things in place and hope things get better. Right. So sometimes just taking the time to measure something or agree on what you're going to measure and what success is going to be might be the most important thing.
Ted, one of the things you said, and I don't want to take us too far down a rabbit hole, but maybe Kim and Madeline are experiencing this too, but with all positive intention, many companies would love to have employees take their PTO time for work-life balance, but the staffing challenges in many industries that are direct caregiving currently, that's posing a challenge in and of itself. Many companies have people with PTO to use that are unable to use it because hands are needed at the bedside, for instance. So that, I think, is a compounding factor in some of the things we're talking about today.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it is the reality of the space that we're in particular, if you're in any of those healthcare spaces, if you're in any of the home health spaces, frankly, any of the service industries, I think are battling some of the same kinds of aspects. You don't have enough staff to do the amount of work that needs to get done. And consequently, it puts crunches on individuals. And I think that, yes, that's the reality. The key, I think, is not just kind of throwing up your arms and saying, well, that's the way life is. Let's just keep going. Right. I think what's important in all of that is, yeah, you're going to have to work through that. And yeah, it might mean that you're not able to take that PTO or your staff isn't, but you should be thinking beyond the moment of time and thinking about what's that long-term impact going to be and constantly trying to find some different strategies, right? Are there some ways for us to find some different kinds of efficiencies in how we do particular things that would allow us to do more with what we have? Are there ways for us to rotate staff differently or to change the hours around how we're doing things or when we're doing things? The answer may be no in some of those cases, but I think the important thing is to not just let it go, right? To understand that we have to keep looking for that. And we have to understand that there's going to be impact to that, right? There's going to be a point at which burnout is just going to happen. And how are you going to deal with that? Or how might you head that off? Might you find other ways? We used to toss around this term of, PTO, it was kind of non-PTO, PTO, right? So can you create times within a regular shift where people are just taking moments, right? Are creating time where they can center, where they can take a breath, right? So that it's not constant. How do we think about this stuff differently? And we've been forced to, the pandemic has obviously forced us to do that in a lot of ways and regards, but it's creating more stress. So what's important, I think, is that we're spending the time to think about not only now, but the aftermath of now and understand how that plays in. That might not give you the answers and it might not change the reality of the situation. But the last thing you want to be is, okay, we get through this moment and now, oh my gosh, we have this other nightmare ahead of us because all these folks are burned out and now we have a different kind of staffing issue or a different kind of supply chain issue or something like that wrapped into it. So just thinking ahead, I think, is important and relevant.
As Ted was talking about about what we're experiencing today in healthcare, it's a sense of moral distress that I think we're seeing throughout healthcare and being able to pivot in a way that's meaningful, like the scheduling, like the ability to take a breath. I guess, Ted, if you had a crystal ball for the future, what kinds of things would you recommend for today's leaders to be able to support how to get over that hurdle of moral distress?
Well, I don't know that I have any special thoughts other than one, as a leader, you need to make sure you're taking care of yourself as well. One of the worst things that can happen is you're not taking care of yourself at the same time that you're trying to take care of everybody else. And it's kind of cliche to even talk about that. But I think in reference to what you're speaking of, I think it's hugely important, right? People have to understand and be prepared to manage themselves before they can help manage and lead others. And so I think that would be one. Don't let that self-care and self-help go by the wayside. Figure that out. If you're going to figure anything out, figure that out, because you need to be in a good place and you need to be resilient in order to be able to put the plans and strategies together to help other people do that. And I guess maybe the other strategy in all this is, again, don't wait to start thinking about it, right? I think that, again, the tendency is we get so overwhelmed in everything that we're in at the moment that we just got to force ourselves through that moment and we're not thinking about it. Create the time. As a manager, as a leader, create the time to think about what's next and force that into your routine because things are going to change and they're going to change very quickly and rapidly. And while you might not have the planned out answer, being in the mode of thinking and changing and working will help you be prepared to go there. Other than that, I'm not sure that there's, anything specific that I would point to, Kim.
So, Ted, given all of that, what one piece of advice would you give to leaders on this topic? Just one.
I would say understand and spend time thinking about resilience. And part of that means understand resilience. I think in general, people immediately think about resilience from the dictionary definition point of view, which is probably a good place to start, right? You know, being able to bounce back, being able to come back and move forward from where you're at. But in doing that, I think you have to remember that the key in business resilience and corporate resilience is it's all about people, right? And so you have to make sure that you understand really what resilience is about. And I think I mentioned this maybe a little bit earlier, Janet. I think when we spoke previously, I mentioned this before, right? Think about that sort of resilience spectrum, right? Everything that impacts an individual and what we all bring with us to the table every day, whether we're going into the office or we're going somewhere else. There's sort of everything on the left side of that, right? Which is the very personal kinds of stuff that you're going through and you're working through. The argument you had with your 16-year-old last night, the financial challenges that you're having at home, maybe there's substance abuse issues or something like that. And then all the way over here on the right side is all the stuff that sort of happens to you, right? From your environment and whatnot. And I think as a leader, you have to understand that none of that stuff sort of happens separately and in vacuums. It's happening sort of all at once. And every single person is being impacted by it differently. And so you have to be able to help people along that entire resilience spectrum. How do they stay happy, healthy, and impactful, regardless of where they're at and what's coming, and regardless of who's coming together? And I think just having that understanding that that's all going on, and that means that we have to think about this differently, is the best first start for people to begin to get their arms around, okay, what do we do? How do we approach this? What's most important? But, you know, we're your company, your employees are a community. They're part of this larger community, and we're being impacted by all these other things. And resilience means helping through all of that. I think people take, we talk about work-life separation, and that's interesting. And yes, I believe in work-life separation in terms of activities and creating time and whatnot, but to think that things actually happen separated isn't the case. Work-life is always brought together, and being resilient means being able to move through this. And as a good leader and a good manager, you need to recognize that, understand that, and then to begin to think about how you help your employees and your organization through that.
Thanks, Ted. So Ted, on behalf of Kim and Madeline and I and ACHE Wisconsin, want to thank you very much for being our guest today on this topic of workforce resilience. It certainly is a very vital topic for all of us as healthcare leaders. Want to recap a few things in the wealth of information that you shared today. One thing I noted and starred was that you started, Ted, by saying that negative events can trigger workforce resilience efforts. And so it feels incumbent on us as healthcare leaders to say, how can we flip that script? We shouldn't necessarily be waiting for those negative events to be thinking about this kind of work. I also made a note about your comment that in thinking about this work, we need to be prepared for both the operational and the emotional side of events. And that often we focus so much on buttoning up the operational side that we're neglecting that emotional side. And this podcast is a bit of a call to action to be more balanced in that planning. Then the third thing I starred was know thy workforce. So if we're going to be effective in developing workforce resilience strategies, we have to understand the challenges that are most often being faced by our unique community of employees and be prepared to know thy workforce and plan from that foundation. Then the fourth thing I noted was know thyself in terms of self-care. And I can't help but remember reading a book, Who's Filling Your Bucket, or something like that. And so we need to think about who or what will fill our buckets as leaders so that we can give then this workforce resilience work and our teams and our companies the attention it deserves. So thank you for giving us a lot of thought starters on this topic, Ted. And speaking of thank yous, as we're recording this podcast, it's actually November. It's the month of Thanksgiving, though you may be listening to it in a different month of the year. Regardless of when you're tuning in, we thank you for listening to Coffee with the College and wish you a wonderful Thanksgiving or a wonderful month of appreciation whenever you're listening in. Take care, and we hope you'll join us next time.